to Washington, D.C., and Linda Kenyon. Well, what about President Trump's best buddy?
His best buddy might be, are you referring to as Vladimir Putin?
Well, I was being a little sarcastic, but yes.
Yes, it seems that he's very concerned. He feels very frustrated with his friend. He feels that he may have even been betrayed by his friend. And so he's been ramping up on his social media, sending out his Truth Social text saying, what Vladimir Putin does not realize is that if it weren't for me, lots of really, really bad things would have happened to Russia. And I mean really bad in all caps. Also, quote, he's playing with fire. Now, what is he referring to? Well, he's referring to the fact that while President Trump wants to broker a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine, something he promised to do on day one of his presidency, if not even before, has been repeatedly frustrated, most recently by Vladimir Putin's continued missile and drone strikes against Ukraine. They've been doing that several days in a row now, killing Ukrainian civilians in cities. And this all at the same time while President Trump is saying that, you know, that there's going to be an agreement either for a ceasefire or what have you. Now, to confuse the issue, at the same time the Russian drone and missile strikes continue to rain down on Ukraine, there has been an agreement to exchange prisoners. Apparently, Russia and Ukraine have reached this deal, although the details are rather sketchy. And I may point out that the details are rather sketchy when it comes to a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine, with Ukraine saying it's on board and Russia sending these mixed messages.
Drones over Kyiv?
Like drones over Kyiv. Mm. It's hard to mistake that as a gesture of peace.
And Kharkiv, too, getting whacked.
Yes, yes. And, you know, so President Trump's very frustrated. Now, you may recall that when Ukrainian President Zelensky was at the White House sitting in the Oval Office, he said to President Trump that Vladimir Putin is not to be trusted. And Trump was very angry at Putin, Zelensky for saying that, effectively throwing him out of the White House after saying, I know Putin. He's a good friend of mine. We've known each other a long time. He wouldn't do that to me. Well, now it seems that he is doing that. And Trump he has two choices at this point. He can either walk away from any efforts to broker a peace deal, which he doesn't want to do because he really wants to cement his legacy as a peacemaker, not only there, but also in Gaza and other places around the globe. If he doesn't decide to do that, he could possibly ramp up some punishing sanctions against Russia. He seems to have been reluctant to do that, but more and more with each passing day, the word sanctions seems to pop up.
And, you know, the scary thing about this is it's kind of like a repeat of the years leading up to World War II. And it wasn't the United States that was threatened. It was France and Belgium and Spain and Portugal. And of course, the Baltic states, they were the ones who were being threatened. This time it was by Germany, but nonetheless, they were being threatened by a despot. And now we've got Putin, who's first of all going after Ukraine, and Europe wants to stop him right there in Ukraine. They don't want to going any further than that. In fact, they don't want to going any further than Russia. Yeah. But, you know, the United States always gets dragged into these things.
And he's building up troops along the Scandinavian borders.
Europe is very nervous about this, and you can see why.
And I know the Biden administration did everything they could to keep U.S. boots from going on the ground in Ukraine because we knew that would be tantamount to World War III. Yet now, the Trump administration is being threatened with kind of the same possibility. What more can we do if the sanctions don't work? What can we do? I mean, we've stopped providing them weapons. So, what do we do? Do we go in there and take care of it ourselves?
Well, that's exactly what the U.S., as you point out, wants to avoid. However, the U.S. and Ukraine have reached a rare earth minerals deal for U.S. to go in there and have a business-based operation, a civilian-based American operation, to dig for rare earth minerals, something that Trump really, really wanted very badly. And he got it. He got that deal with Ukraine. The thought process being not only would that be good business, but that Russia, it would serve as a deterrent to Russia, because Russia would never attack Ukraine if there are Americans on the ground, you know, thinking that they don't want to poke the bear, so to speak, and have the United States dragged into a war against Russia. Well, we haven't seen the companies that are going in there actually building their infrastructure yet. The deal has been signed, and you know, that could drag the U.S. into a war. So the deterrent factor regarding that is not necessarily going to be the deterrent, perhaps, that Trump had hoped for.
The thing that I kind of got from J.D. Vance's commencement speech at Maryland was that we're not going to do any more of these endless wars. What we're going to do is we're going to go in, we're going to hit hard and get the heck out. This is a very libertarian position of philosophy. No more open-ended wars.
Yeah, I mean, who wants an open-ended war, right? But it's always easy to get in and so hard to get out. And if the U.S., as Vance says, would be provoked to such a point where it would make one big massive strike and then get out, there's, of course, the huge possibility that there would be retaliation. And regardless of the philosophy of getting in and getting out fast, again, easier said than done.
My wife is spending her last week this week in Portugal. She has spoken with many, many people there, particularly younger people, and she's running into a lot of Americans who are graduate students who've been involved in research in the United States at universities in our country, and they are leaving. They're being courted to come to Europe and work and continue their research in those countries. This is a brain drain that is pretty scary. We did it, you know, to Germany during World War, or after World War II. And are you seeing anything, any semblance of this going on?
There is a lot of discussion about that, whether we're going to have a repeat of the Wernher von Braun situation, where the major rocket scientist came to the United States of America and a whole lot of other top-notch German scientists and helped build American scientific communities, including NASA, by the way. You know, there is that concern. Why would foreign students want to come to the U.S. where they are been shown right now that they're not wanted? And, you know, those who are already here who have been in the midst of strategic research, biomedical research for American pharmaceuticals, scientific research for energy, all of the huge host of research grants that go to colleges and universities, now facing this extra scrutiny or told to go home or transfer to other institutions other than, for example, Harvard. President Trump taking especially hard angle toward Harvard. You know, yes, there is a concern, there's a brain drain, and you're kind of looking at it from their point of view. You know, you can see why they wouldn't want to come to the U.S. or return to the U.S. if they were already here. Adding to this is the fact that the U.S. has paused all interviews for student visas. The State Department says there's this freeze that's going into effect, so that, in part, these students who are applying for visas can undergo even greater scrutiny, one of which is to examine their social media. The State Department says there's nothing wrong with that, that other countries do the same, and that the U.S. has the right to know who's here, who wants to be here, what they've done in the past, and what they might do when they're here in the future. However, there's a lot of concern about that. Now, why is this happening? Well, the president is very angry at Harvard, saying that they haven't done enough to crack down on on-campus protests against the war in Gaza, that other colleges and universities are doing the same. But Harvard being what the president terms as an extremely liberal organization, an extremely liberal college, /university, you know, that's a very big fish in the intellectual community. And so he's taking aim at the big fish first, sending a chilling effect to other colleges and universities that this will happen to them as well. So right now, these student visas are on hold, and that could be very damaging to fall enrollment. And I believe the figure is almost 1 in 4 students at Harvard is an international student.
Wow. You know, there's been a dirty little secret around for the past decade that we are losing a lot of our college graduates to places like Ecuador and Brazil and Belize and Costa Rica, because they can make more. They don't need to make as much money, because they can live in that economy so much better. All they have to do is learn another language, which they're more than happy to do. Many of them learn that language in college.
Yeah. It's an issue, you know, and it's not just the students, it's the professors. A lot of professors are from other countries as well. When was the last time you went to a doctor's office? And, you know, certainly in this part of the country, most of the doctors are not American-born, highly trained, highly educated, highly qualified, but they come from other countries. That is a trend that we've been seeing unfolding in the medical field for a very long time. Very smart scientists come to this country. If they are suddenly made to feel that they are not welcome here, of course they'll look elsewhere.
So we've got, I guess we've got everybody back in town. What is the Senate doing with their big, beautiful bill?
Well, they're trickling back into town. They're not in full-fledged force yet, so they're not doing a whole lot this week. They're just coming back a little at a time. They will be ramped up to full scale starting next week. And then this big, beautiful bill, as the president calls it, will be handled by the Senate after passing in the House by just one vote. The Republicans control both the House and the Senate, but their margin is very slim in both houses of Congress. And House Speaker Mike Johnson has warned Senate Republicans. He said, look, don't tinker too much with this bill. We have a very delicate balance here in the House, and if you tinker with it too much and you send it back to us, you know, to pass a tinkered version, if you will, it may not pass. So this is a problem, because there's a lot of Senate Republicans, moderates and conservatives, who have individual problems with this bill, not the least of which is cutting to Medicaid. And we're seeing an unusual senator rising to the top on this issue, Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, very conservative, very Trump-supporting senator, who doesn't like the cuts to Medicaid and has become kind of a trailblazer in campaigning against that.
Okay, now, Linda, the Congressional Budget Office on Tuesday released some information that said the legislation will increase the debt by $2.3 trillion over 10 years, and that will trigger as much as $500 billion in Medicare cuts starting as soon as 2026. So there is stuff in there that affects Medicare as well as Medicaid.
How can that be happening?
Well, the president, as you know, has said he's not going to touch Medicare and Social Security until, of course, he has no choice but to do that if he hones in to his promise, which is tax cuts, not just across the board tax cuts for the middle class, which would be some of them in particular, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security, but no tax on other issues could add to the deficit. And that includes cutting the tax rate, cutting the taxes for millionaires and billionaires. And that may end up what is going to, you know, add to the deficit, that we're cutting all these programs, nibbling around the edges, and then there's nothing left but the major programs they call entitlements, which is kind of a misnomer. It's not something you didn't earn. You earn your Medicare, you earn your Social Security, you earn your Medicaid through taxes that are taken out of your paycheck since the time you get your first check at the age of 16 or what have you. So those are the big fish. So where else do you cut? They're already laying off and thousands and thousands of federal workers. That's not doing it. they're already eliminating some agencies and departments, which is what Congress is empowered to do, but hasn't really done anything to stop that and to hone to the separation of powers as conscribed in the Constitution. So that hasn't done it. So what do? You go after taxes or you go after the big fish?
I'm going to tax your memory bank here just a little bit.
Okay, taxes.
Taking us all the way back to Alan Simpson, Senator Alan Simpson, and sequestration. Is that still a reality in this country?
Sequestration is a budgetary tactic. What it means, among other things, is it bypasses some of the unlimited debate. It allows for no extraneous amendments. It has to be germane to the bill. It does also require, across the board, equal amounts of cuts. None of that will be deemed appropriate if this reconciliation bill, this is very inside baseball here, but this reconciliation bill does go through reconciliation when it gets to the Senate and to final passage. And that would require just a simple majority. Because none of it's going to matter if they don't even have a simple majority. And right now they don't have a simple majority because Republicans are split on this issue. And given the very slim majority that they do have, two or three senators dropping out of this on the Republican side of the aisle sinks everything, whether it be reconciliation or sequestration. It's just not something that will work.
But the point here that you made is that, and Robin said, well, we're going to cut $500 billion, I guess, out of Medicare because we took that money out of Medicaid.
And the president saying, no, I'm not going to touch Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security or, until he finds that he's got himself painted into a box here and he can continue to lean on his Republicans in the House and the Senate, but at some point they're going to push back because they're hearing a lot of pushback from their constituents who don't like it.
And meanwhile, we have the military parade and red states like Kansas, Missouri, Kentucky, Arkansas, and Mississippi recovering from tornadoes, and FEMA not sending any help. And, it's like, you got to make a, why do we need a military parade that's going to cost tens of millions of dollars when we're not taking care of our own backyard, so to speak?
Well, the president says the military parade is worth every dollar in investment, that the payback from that is going to be much more than in dollars and cents. It will be patriotic. It will ramp up enthusiasm. It's worth every single dollar. It also happens to coincide with his 79th birthday. He's very attuned to the optics of the strength of the military-industrial complex. He's very attuned to the optics of patriotism, and he feels that this will be something that will ramp that up even further. And his supporters will, of course, love it. And I will say the people of D.C., not so much, in part because it's going to tear up the streets, tank treads on pavement isn't really a very good combination. And at first, the D.C. government said, no, you can't do that. I mean, who's going to fix the roads afterward? So there's a big debate over that.
Yeah. One point that just we say, yeah, it's the president's birthday. Yeah, it's the the 250th anniversary of the Army. But it's also Flag Day.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that. It's also Flag Day. It's a day we're going to fly flags anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right. Oh, but people do have a tendency to forget that. What about Memorial Day? Memorial Day was all about barbecues and mattress sales, It's supposed to be about
mattress sales.
Remembering those who served our country and those who who died in the service of our country.
Linda, as always, we appreciate your great reporting, and thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
Thanks, Linda.
You're welcome. Have a good day.